Shoot the Defense, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Do you know what? I can't ever get to grips with this thing. It says recording, and I don't know if it actually is recording because there isn't a timer.
Yeah, it is recording. So, so it records, and then when you close it, then it converts the
It converts it to the MP4, whatever it is, and then you get the audio, and then, whatever. See, I'm getting too old for this technology, man. I need to save it for you youngsters. You youngsters that actually know what you're doing. I'm like, fuck, mate. Well, that's it. Welcome to Shoot the Defense. I'm your host, Stel. My co-host this evening isn't Rodri Giggs because Rodri is unavailable to talk. I've tried calling him. Maybe he's, maybe he's upset about yesterday's result. He doesn't want to talk about it. He's just blanking my calls. Or maybe he's blocked me. I don't know. Whatever. But my co-host is Coach Kojo. Welcome, Geezer.
Thanks, bro, for having me again, man. I've missed Shoot Defense. So I was even talking to Double D last week. I was like, yo, your show last week was great, man. I missed Shoot Defense, you know. So when you messaged me, I was like, yes, I'm there. So I told you I was messaging the other guy. I said, listen, if it's at 9:30, don't even consider me.
I'm glad we're a priority. I'm glad.
Yeah, this is family, you know what I'm saying?
Thank you, man. So, appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it. But yeah, so we're going to be discussing the Premier League matches over the weekend. And to be honest, mate, going into this season, given how short the short duration of time there's been since the season has ended, since the season has resumed. I've been pleasantly surprised with, I wouldn't say the quality of football, because I can only describe it as hockey, really, given the scorelines. But I must admit, a lot of the players look sharp, they look fit, and they seem to have worked hard to maintain their fitness since, obviously, the season has ended. But let's begin the show with the Liverpool-Chelsea game. And the reason why I want to start off on this one, not because it was the big game of the weekend, but so much happened in a game that you'd have thought would be, I don't know, non-eventful. I guess that's probably the right word. You know, when you see two teams, big teams that are challenging for, you expect to be challenging for top four or the title, play each other at the beginning of the season, it's very rare that you see them both going at hammer and tong. But Liverpool came out of the blocks. I think the turning point must have been Christensen sending off, because it looked fairly comfortable for them anyway. I know Kepa had a bit of a mare at the beginning when he went running out of goal, chasing Salah. I don't know what he was doing, but that's Kepa, I guess. But then, obviously, the game changed through the red card. Sadio Mane scored the first for Liverpool. Then he grabbed a second, thanks to Kepa's utter fuck-up. But in terms of the standard of football, were you surprised with how both teams set their stall out?
With Liverpool, no. I feel like Liverpool have learned how to look after their players better now, especially with Klopp, because I remember with Klopp, there was always this thing about when he's played gegenpressing football, and then his players will get injured quite a bit and they'll be lacking fitness, but they don't play the same style anymore. They're not heavy metal football. So, you know, I thought they adapted quite well. And Chelsea, to be fair, I think Chelsea, I'm still unsure whether they're completely fit yet. How much pre-season they had, but they've played, one game as well, I think as many other clubs have had. So that one didn't really surprise me. But they did look comfy, just because I feel like they gave Liverpool too much respect. They let Liverpool control the game a bit more. So maybe that's why Liverpool looked a little more sharper, because they wanted to ping their passes around and do their thing a lot more easier. But Chelsea were also just very comfortable just sitting back. Maybe that is a lack of fitness. Maybe it's a bit of lack of sharpness. Werner looked off the boil. Havertz is still adapting. The only person that I can't really blame for lack of sharpness because he just performed the way I thought he would was Alonso. Poor. So apart from Alonso and obviously Kepa, who, you know, we'd have to go really go too much about him. Those two didn't shock me. But yeah, I think Liverpool were well prepared. And I think that game last week against Leeds kind of woke them up as well. So no surprises for me from Liverpool's perspective anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, I was very impressed with Naby Keita, a player who's come under some criticism over the past few months. Granted, he's been unlucky with injuries. And back end of the season before, when Liverpool ran City close to the title, I think he was going through a purple patch, wasn't he? He had a fantastic game at Southampton. And I think, again, he picked up an injury and that was it for him. But today, he kind of went man for man with N'Golo Kante. And he had the beating of him. It just shows that, okay, granted, the game was practically over as a contest, but Lampard had to haul off Kovacic and N'Golo Kante to try and go for the game. But Liverpool were in firm control. And again, it didn't surprise me how well Liverpool played. But I was more surprised at how disorganised Chelsea were defensively. You'd think that they'd have worked hard on marshalling that back four. Granted, they were playing two banks of four and trying to stifle Liverpool. But again, it's fine margins, isn't it? When you go down to 10 men against any team in the Premier League, it's going to be difficult. But when you go down to 10 men against Liverpool, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. But see, the thing with Chelsea is I haven't trusted their defence for a long time. I mean, obviously, Azpilicueta has been, he's getting older. He's starting to lose his powers bit by bit. So that's understandable. But when you see a backline of, or centre pairing anyway, of Christensen and Kurt Zouma, I'm never convinced. And there's a reason why they've gone 50 million for Chilwell, because obviously you cannot trust Marcus Alonso to be the more defensively good anyway. Of course, going forward and at set pieces, he's got talent, but defensively he's never been promising, let alone good. So I just wasn't convinced. And when they got sent, when they lost Christensen as well, I mean, Tomori is a young guy, it's his first full season last year in the Premier League. Maybe trying to get used to it a bit still, but he's not someone that convinces me either. And I feel like that's why they needed someone like Thiago. Again, he's older, he's going to start losing his powers as well, but the experience, the leadership, they've missed that in the back for a while now. I don't think Rudiger provides that either. So in regards to today, when they went down to 10 men, it was just a matter of time. It looked like it was just going to come at some point, and it did. Quite comfortably for their goals, Liverpool. So I've never been convinced by them defensively. That one, again, that's why I don't really blame on sharpness. I just don't think they're good enough. Mm. And I feel like Chelsea will be a team this year that needs to score a lot more than they concede. Sort of like a throwback to Kevin Keegan's Newcastle.
who could hit many,
but concede any as well. So yeah, I've never rated that defence, and there's not one defender in there apart from Thiago Silva, who I can look at and say, yeah, I think I can trust you in my backline.
Mm. Well, this is it. When you, it's funny you mentioned Newcastle's defending, because I remember back then you could practically name their back four. It would be Warren Barton, Peacock, Albert, and probably Beresford. Mm. Whereas with Chelsea, I'm guessing that their ideal back four will be James, Thiago, Rudiger and Chilwell. Now, we don't know when Chilwell and Thiago are going to be ready to play. Christensen's going to get a one-game ban because it wasn't violent conduct, was it? So, effectively, Tomori is going to be partnering Zouma or Rudiger when he comes back. So, when they do get that ideal back four, how long do you think it will take them to bed in? Because don't forget, Thiago Silva is only learning English now. I think he's using Duolingo to learn English. So when you've got Thiago there and you've got Rudiger, does Rudiger speak Portuguese or Italian? I mean, I think he speaks Italian, doesn't he? Because he's a Roma, wasn't he?
Yes.
So you'd have thought he'd speak Italian. So the communication will be there from a central defensive partnership. But with James and Chilwell there, I presume they'll just be bombing forward and hoping that maybe Kante or Jorginho can protect the two central defenders.
I mean, yeah, the communicate. People tend to underestimate how important communication is in the defense. You know, I mean, I think we've got used to this era of recovery defending so much that, you know, when two defenders are so far apart, but because someone can chase back and make that challenge, that's great defending. That's never been how it should be, you know. Yep. We grew up on defenders being in the right place in the right time, organised, and your goalkeepers being commanding. So, I mean, you've mentioned it over the years many times that De Gea has never been commanding, but because he makes super saves, he's seen as one of the best in Premier League history, but he doesn't compare to a Van der Sar or a Schmeichel for keeping it real. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Chelsea's defence, with that back four, it will take them time to bed in. Why I feel like Thiago will do well is he's still kind of like a throwback centre-back. He doesn't really focus on the recovery. And I feel like talking to someone with Rudiger, I think he can try and get them to relay that message to the other two who will not speak maybe Italian or something. Maybe they surprise us. Never know. Maybe Chilwell was fluent in Spanish or Italian. You never know. But
Corona doesn't make you fluent in Spanish, my friend.
But I'm sure Thiago at least right now is learning like just the key commands that he feels like he's going to have to learn, because the video of it from his wife recording him learning Duolingo, saying that he wants to go to university and he completely said something different. It was hilarious. So it will take some time, but that is a good defense, in my opinion. Massively improved by Thiago Silva. But of course, the communication is key. So if he learns a bit of English, or if Rudiger can definitely help him at Italian, as you pointed out, he played in Roma, then you can definitely do something there. Christiansen is what? He's Danish?
I don't know if he
speaks anything but English and Danish. I don't know. And I know for a fact, I mean, I'm
he might speak a bit of German, because I know he played for, was it Werder Bremen on loan? Didn't he go there on loan or something?
He did go on there on loan. So I would hope that he learned a bit over there. Hopefully he didn't behave like Gareth Bale or not learn one bit of Spanish. But I would hope that they can find a way. He's experienced. I think with his football knowledge in general, they'll follow his lead, and I think he'll be able to get them to do something better. But they need to improve on their defensive record, because last year was completely embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of embarrassing, Jorginho, that penalty. Now, I shouldn't laugh, because he's scored every time he's taken a penalty like that for Chelsea. But when you're coming across a goalkeeper like Alisson, who is an outstanding goalkeeper, let's not make any bones about it. He's probably studied the way that he takes penalties, and obviously they speak the same language as well, being Brazilians. Mm. Do you think he'll change his penalty style, or do you think he'll keep it?
I think he's going to keep it. Mm. I think he's too used to it. I think his mistake today, as you pointed out, when you come up across someone like Alisson, sometimes you can't mess about with the penalty. But also he doesn't vary his penalties. So, you know, the other person that does that sort of leap is Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
But he does the leap maybe 6 times out of 10. Sometimes he just runs up and completely hits it into the back of the net. You know, so you have to keep it going each way. And even me, I mean, I was watching it. And I was like, last time, I feel like I noticed a pattern that he just keeps going from side to side really for each penalty. He doesn't really maybe go left twice in a row and then surprise you for right, and then go right maybe 5 times, and then out of nowhere go for the left. He tends to just go from side to side.
Yeah.
But it looked like a poorly hit penalty anyway, because Alisson didn't really make his move until the ball was hit. So if the ball was hit and then he can make his move and save it comfortably, that's not a well-hit penalty. So Jorginho needs to start thinking about maybe varying his run-ups, you know, trying to bamboozle the goalkeeper a bit more. But today's penalty was absolutely abysmal.
Yeah.
It was a poor penalty, but a good save. Regardless.
Right. Okay, one more thing on Chelsea then. Havertz went off. Werner had a pretty quiet game, albeit he won a penalty and he had a shot that went wide. We know that they're quality players, and it's very easy to get on their backs after a couple of average performances in the first couple of games. But I honestly believe that once Lampard has that system right, once he's got a fully fit 11, that's when you're going to see these players come into fruition. Because, as I said before, it's so easy to get on these players' backs. They're quality players. It's a new league for them. New language, new style of play, physicality, everything. And let's be 100% honest, the quality of the Bundesliga defensively is worse than the Prem.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, well, you know, in this country, people lack patience. And that's the key thing. You know, as soon as your fee is big, you expected to hit the ground running.
Yep.
That's the kind of thing that Naby Keita got. You've obviously pointed out that when he went for that purple patch, he struggled with injuries, but now he's starting to play a lot more games. Just before lockdown, just after lockdown, he started to play a lot more football for Klopp. you know, you got to give these guys time. Sometimes it takes a year and a half for some guys to get used to the speed, the style of the Premier League. So there's people will lack patience here. And if Werner doesn't have, I don't know, 10 by December, it's going to be, oh, is he a fraud? Is he this? Is he that? You just got to take time with these guys. You know, I mean, the one person that hurts me to this day that I guess they say he didn't really crack in the Premier League was Veyron. But maybe I'm wrong here, but for me personally, I don't think Veyron was that bad for Man United.
I think he was unlucky, coach. He was unlucky. Yeah. He was unlucky because he had a whole heap of experienced players that knew the Premier League inside and out. And it was a brand new league for him. He had an ankle injury that he was carrying. There was an issue, I think, with his passport as well at the time. Again, new language, new surroundings. And on top of that, I don't think Fergie knew his best position because we saw him excel in Europe as a number 10. Yeah. But in the Premier League, it just wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. He wasn't mobile enough for the Premier League at the time anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a example I always come back to because Veyron was a supreme footballer. We all saw it. And he had quite a bit of standout performances for Man United as well, if people really look into his time there. So, you know, when it comes to now Havertz and Werner, they're going to see, especially people that don't really watch Bundesliga, which is fine, but they're going to just go and see these compilations on your Twitters and your YouTubes, and they're going to say, well, I need to see that on a consistent basis or every week. That's not how football works. And, you know, we have a history of players that haven't made the cut here and then they go to another league, they completely rip it up and say, oh, well, that's why the Premier League is the toughest league in the world. But then some of the leagues that you criticise, some of their players have come here and completely ripped it up. How many times have we signed players from League One and they've completely come here and they've destroyed the league? Hazard had fun here himself. The Dutch league, everyone's very quick to point out Alphonso Alves, but then I can come out and say, with Van Nistelrooy and Luis Suarez ripped it up here. You know, so they've got to give these guys time. It's not easy to just step from one league to the other. It doesn't work like that. That's a dime a dozen. So give these guys time. They are quality footballers. If Chelsea really have the patience, these guys will really grow here and become what they want them to become. But if they don't, then they'll sell them off and they'll become stars elsewhere. So they need to take the time and let these guys build.
Agreed. All right, before we wrap this game up, can't not talk about Thiago Alcantara. He made his debut. Okay, he gave away a penalty. But we know he's a quality player. And I think right now he's arguably the best creative midfielder in the world. Arguably. I mean, we could talk about De Bruyne, we could talk about other players, but when we talk about form, especially back in the last season, the way that he had the baton at Bayern Munich and he just dictated every single Champions League game. I remember watching, he was phenomenal. D-Man said something interesting on the DD40 Factory this morning. It was yesterday morning, on the show. He said that Liverpool have effectively won the title with this guy. Now, I think that's a little bit premature. However, when you look at it realistically, I can't see where he's gone wrong saying that.
It is premature, but it's funny that because they're champions, and they've added such a high level of quality to their team. And the one criticism people had of them is the lack or so-called lack of creativity from the middle. Well, they've just added one hell of creativity from into the middle. And he can do it deep. He can do it in front of the defense, the opposition defense. He can do it anywhere. So, yeah, does it give them the title? It's very premature. And I still think, you know, you got to wait for your City to play. I mean, obviously, they're just beating Chelsea, but, you know, if they were able to get their play, if they can keep up just maybe 3-5 points behind, get their 11 ready and play, and then you see them actually get to full flow, they could keep up as well, even though closing the gap is more of a priority for them rather than challenging for the title. But I think we got to take our time with that because you don't know what's going to happen during the season. I wouldn't wish on anyone, but you don't know if Thiago gets injured. You don't know if many of the front three gets injured. But so far, as much as I have to admit, he is kind of right, isn't it?
Yep.
I've said all that, but I've come down to he is probably right.
It's all right. I know where you're coming from. All right, let's talk about Liverpool's rivals, Everton, who absolutely walloped West Brom 5-2. But when you listen to the comments from Ancelotti and Slaven Bilic at full-time, it didn't seem like a 5-2 scoreline, especially in the first half, because Bilic was very happy with the way his team pressed. Even Ancelotti said they gave them a lot of problems. But again, when you come from the Championship to the Premier League, it's a completely different kettle of fish. Granted, the Championship is an unforgiving league and there are a lot of demands there. But when you make that step up, everything is different. Everything is magnified 100 times over. And for West Brom to fold the way they did, for me, it's a massive, massive concern. Now, don't get me wrong. They're going to be favourites for the drop. That's understandable. But given the way that they performed on the opening day, given the way that they performed yesterday, you could see why they're contenders for relegation, can't you?
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of their Premier League heritage, isn't it?
Premier League heritage for West Brom, right?
I mean, apart from the 1 year that maybe Pete, I don't know much of their fan base. I don't know if they still talk about Kim Richardson and that year with Jeff Wilson.
They stayed up, yeah.
And they stayed up. I don't know if they still talk about that. But other than that, anytime they've been relegated, it's been quite comfortable. And this was no different when he came to this game. I think maybe they wilted when they saw the quality. They started off very well. And then, you know, they scored a wonderful free kick to equalise when they went 2-1 down. But as soon as they conceded again, I think they were just done. There was no way back for them. I think they wilted at the quality. I think they allowed Everton to get too much control. And I feel like Everton needed them to fall back as well also, because some of the goals Everton conceded, well, both of them actually, no, the free kick was fine. The first goal they conceded was an absolute disgrace. But West Brom, I'm not shocked. I'm not surprised. I genuinely think at some point they could be in contention to, it's early, but I feel like they could be in contention to break that all-time derby record.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I don't have much faith. I understand the excitement with Dean Garner and Matheus Pereira, but that's 2 out of 11 on the pitch, and I'm not convinced by the other 9.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. What about Everton then? I know Ancelotti was using words like, you know, players are more ambitious this season, they're more motivated, which, okay, that's an improvement. I mean, you know, he's a world-class manager. He's won trophies everywhere he's been. He's been a success everywhere he's been. And he's obviously brought in a lot of quality players like James Rodriguez. He brought in Doucouré from Watford. But then obviously you've still got the likes of Andre Gomes and you've got Lucas Digne. You mentioned the defensive element in terms of the first goal that they conceded. Are we looking at a team that can possibly challenge for maybe top 6 if they get that back line sorted?
Yeah. I love the fact that they bought Alan and Doucouré. That's a massive improvement on that midfield. I'm sorry to say this, and I don't know if you'll ever hear me saying this about him right now, but Tom Davies has never been it. I understand trying to build someone from the youth and all that you know, that connection and that, but he's just not good enough, especially if you want to try and challenge. And I feel like what Ancelotti's saying about motivation is so key, because how can you come into the dressing room and sit next to James Rodriguez and not feel motivated? Someone that's played at the highest level, has a goal that's replayed over and over for World Cup history, that volley. I mean, the guy is quality, and he's someone that wants to play in the biggest competitions without a shadow of a doubt. And the reason he's come here is because of your manager. Because if your manager was previous managers, you wouldn't be getting James Rodriguez, you wouldn't be getting Alan, probably Doucouré because he was at Watford, but you wouldn't be getting the other two. You have to be motivated. But the only way also they're going to challenge for a top 6 spot is if they get Yerry Mina and Michael Keane to sort them themselves out. Because the way they backed off completely, like they just kept running away from their... I generally compared it to a kid running away from a dog. You know, you're scared when you see a dog coming and chasing you and that. So, you know, he's coming at you with the ball and they just keep running back. And then they turn the head again to look if he's coming still. And they're like, oh shit, he's getting closer. Let's get back into the box. And I'm just sitting there thinking, when are you going to turn around and be like, oh wait, I'm in my box now. I need to actually go near him. They didn't get anywhere near him at all. It was probably one of the easiest goals you ever scored despite hitting it from distance. Yeah. So if they can sort those two out at the back, then they have an absolute shot. But if not, I mean, the guy behind them, I mean, Pickford. Yeah, he's not going to save you from anything anytime soon. Yeah. So, those are my three main worries. Those three players, primarily, anyway.
Fair enough. Right, let's talk about Dominic Calvert-Lewin's hat-trick quickly, because I know that, obviously, James Rodriguez had a fantastic game and he's going to get a lot of the plaudits, but Calvert-Lewin is, I think he's become the first Everton striker to score a hat-trick since Wayne Rooney in 2017 in the top flight. So that's some statistic. But we're looking at a striker here that has often been overlooked for an England spot. And, okay, I get it. Danny Ings deserves his spot in the England squad because of his season last year. Harry Kane is going to be a starter. But let's be 100% honest, Calvert-Lewin is a completely different striker to what you get from these guys. You're not going to see Harry Kane going for headers in the middle of the park. You're not going to see him trying to hold up the ball. You're not going to see, you know, Danny Ings wrestling defenders for the ball. He's Calvert-Lewin is like the traditional, I hate to say this because it makes my hair stand on end, the traditional English number nine. But he's got more than that, hasn't he? It's not just, you know, strength and power and pace. He's got a lot more in his locker.
Yeah, you can see that his intelligence and his reading of the game is improving. He's starting to get into a lot more of the right places. He's winning his battles in the air much better than last year. And he's starting to find the right place, right time. I think Ancelotti said after the game that he's told Calvert-Lewin to try and score with one touch. He said, if you need more than one touch, you've given yourself much more of a problem. Like, try and get yourself in positions where all you need is one touch to finish it. And I like that, because people tend to think that poachers can't work in this game anymore. But why couldn't they work in this game? It's perfect, especially with a high line. Sometimes, you know, running behind the defence, say on the shoulder of the defender, especially now with a high line where you have so much gaps in between the defenders and your goalkeeper, you know, and because goalkeepers like to now unrush, if you're aware of your surroundings, you can beat a keeper well before he starts to make his move to try and close you down.
Yep.
Because now the fashion is a sweeper keeper. So, you know, I love the fact all his goals in that game were sort of just gritty, you know, so the first one, near enough the line, backheeled into the back of the net, the header, just everything was perfect. And they're all one-touch finishes. This is all you want. Richarlison across the box, got his foot on it as well. That's what you want your striker to do. You know, we grew up on, like, Ruben Nistriel was so much more than a poacher, but he knew how to play the pitch role perfectly as well as be a footballer. So whilst he was getting criticised for, he doesn't do anything in the game apart from score, I mean, that's the job he's supposed to do, which is, I don't know how you criticize someone for doing their job, but hey, okay. So, yeah, if he's going to do that a lot more this season, he's going to get a lot more goals. He has so much creativity around him now. So, the only excuse, well, he has no excuse. I mean, everyone's feeding for him. So, I want him to try and get at least 20 this year. I think he's more than capable of getting 20 this year. And that game showed me exactly why he's capable of getting 20 this year.
Yep, that's right. Right, let's talk about this one, because, you know, let's address the elephant in the room, and that's United losing 3-1 at home to Crystal Palace. Now, I think there's some kind of curse going on. And by that, I mean, last season, we were quite critical of Wilf Zaha. And the beginning of this season, in fact, last show, I said that Andros Townsend is a one-foot pony. And funny enough, he scored the opener with his gammy right foot. And Wilf Zaha scored twice. So, first of all, Kojo, what the fuck do we know? And why are we doing this?
It's funny how football works, isn't it? You criticise someone and they just come in, you know. So, I've just called Tom Davies out for doing nothing, and he's probably going to go and hit two and one from long range next week. Now, you know what? To be honest, bro, were you surprised that we lost? Because I wasn't.
No, not really. No, the thing is, when I watched the first 17, 18 minutes of this, and I was like, I can't be bothered. I just couldn't be bothered. And it's something that I would say, surprise myself? No, I don't surprise myself. But it's come to a point now where watching Man United has become a chore. And it's not because the results aren't there. It's not because of the performances. It's not because a lot of players are overhyped. It's just the way that social media has made watching Man United. And yeah, I know it's my choice to read what's on social media. I could just put the phone down or whatever, but you can't help but look on social media for whether it is, whether it be transfer rumours, whether it be for interesting tweets, whether it be for stupid tweets. Mm. But no, it wasn't a surprise that United lost. They haven't had a pre-season. We had Pogba come back from COVID. So yeah. I don't know how fit he was. He's playing Daniel James wide right when we knew that, let's be 100% honest, on an opening day of the season, you want to make a statement of intent. Daniel James isn't going to do that for you. I don't want to get on the lad's back because he's had enough of that. Mm. But the one thing that irked me most, and it goes back to what I said when Solskjaer was appointed in terms of his tactical ineptitude, right? Hear me out on this one. Last season, when we lost 2-1 against Crystal Palace, who were the two central midfielders?
McTominay and Pogba.
There you go. And who were the two central midfielders yesterday?
McTominay and Pogba.
Okay. So, again, I know Cech Kuyat was playing centre-back, wasn't he? He was a centre-back with Saka, wasn't he? Right? But this is my thinking. You know that when you play these two central midfielders like you did last time, they're going to double up on one of them because they know he's the main outlet.
Yep.
So why are you so hell-bent on playing the same two central midfielders against the same team that choked out this player? I mean, Pogba was at fault for their goal last season, their second goal last season, when Van Aanholt scored the winner, right?
Yeah.
So you're thinking, whenever he's going to get the ball, they're going to double up on him. I don't remember them doing that too much, but then again, you know, they were so organised all round. I don't think they had to worry about it. But here's me thinking, well, play Matic. Matic has had as much time off as McTominay. Play Fred. He's had as much time. Why are you insisting on the same central midfield pairing and then hauling off Pogba, right? Hauling him off. Because that's going to make a difference. That's going to make your life a whole lot easier. Mm. So, again, it's making the same mistakes. It's making the same costly errors. And once again, as I've been saying for God knows how long, defensively, United are a mess. They are a mess. Yeah. Once you get that back line sorted, then and only then can you talk about challenging for anything. Yeah. For anything. Because the way I see it, coach, and this isn't, I know Rod eventually jumps on, or if he listens to it, he's going to say, oh, so I was being negative. You cannot move forward with this back line. Because to be fair, we know United's best back line and it doesn't involve Lindelof. Okay? It doesn't involve Lindelof. Bailly is a better defender. And, you know, again, I've been critical of Eric Bailly and I think he's been unlucky with knee injuries especially. But your best back line is Shaw, Bailly, Maguire and Wan-Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka didn't play. Eric Bailly didn't play. Lindelof played. And Luke Shaw, unfortunately, Luke Shaw, when he gets into a bit of form, he gets injured. So you're on a hiding to nothing. And again, I'm not surprised that United lost. I'm not surprised the way that they lost. And I'm not surprised that they were toothless up front. So I've said what I've had to say so far. Let it rip. I'm going to mute myself. I'm going to get my vape. I'm going to smoke the whole place out. I don't care. Let's go.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised as well. I mean, the first thing that alarmed me was the selection down the whole right side. And anyone that's watched United, not only under Ole, but under Jose, under Van Gaal, we have lacked balance for a long time. And everything keeps going down the left. And that's why Luke Shaw keeps getting victimized, because he's not whipping balls in to the level of Robertson or whatever. But at the end of the day, everything comes down his side. So he's going to get the most to do anyway. And that's just because maybe, I mean, you play Wan-Bissaka down the right. Defensively, yes, he can recover, he can make challenges on the ground, but going forward, he hasn't offered anything since he came to the club. So everything still goes on the left side anyway. That's where everything's going to happen. My second issue was, I had that same thought about Pogba coming out of quarantine, maybe having one training session. Donny van de Beek played a whole 90 minutes in a friendly against Aston Villa last week. Are you telling me he wasn't ready to start the game? I genuinely don't understand what he was thinking along those lines. And I mean, I just mentioned Wan-Bissaka, but Fosu Mensah, I mean, I said this earlier today to some people, and I was like, Fulham, when he was on loan at Fulham, that whole team was bad. But in a team that's shocking, you shouldn't struggle to at least be a little bit of a standout. He was just as bad as everyone else in that team.
Agreed.
But because we're so used to mediocrity now, when he comes back after an injury, fantastic. It was a shocking injury. Came back, played left back and did an all right job. Suddenly he's good enough to play over this person or that person. I had someone telling me that they prefer him at left back over Luke Shaw. That's utter completely bullshit. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was another thing for me. Daniel James, you said it. I don't want to get into his case too much. But again, I don't blame him for this. You know for a fact that Crystal Palace are not going to play a high line against you. And his main strength is his speed. So if he's going to utilize his speed, he needs a line that's going to come forward so he can zing in behind. And lo and behold, the two games last season that I can think of where he made an impact was against Arsenal and against Liverpool, where he was able to use that speed because there was so much space in behind because of that back line. So all he has to do is get a pass in there and he just runs and runs and runs and does his thing. So if you play him against a deep block and he's not a dribbler, he's not someone that takes players on consistently and successfully. So why would you think that it's going to work for him on that right side, knowing full well that they're going to sit deep? That's a managerial issue also. And as for when we talk about Rashford and, you know, Martial and all this, see, and even I'll get on to Lindelof in a second. I have been patient. And you know I've been patient with Martial.
Oh, yes.
I've been very, very patient with Martial. And I have made many excuses for him. And I've said, look, he's played striker and he's played left wing. I didn't care about the number thing. The number thing was nonsense. If you aren't happy about you changing your shirt number, then to be honest, you're just a little child.
Mm.
But I've given you, you know, you hit form and then Sanchez came in out of nowhere, you're benched. I don't understand that because if you're in form, I don't think you should be benched or all that rubbish. But you last season, you played a striker the whole season. You got a decent number of goals for the whole season. I'm good with that. But again, he was making the same mistakes in this game that I've been worried about. No runs in behind. Always waiting ball to feet. Not sure whether he should stay in the centre or go left, which means then makes you clash with Rashford. And because we focus so much football on the left side, you just have a whole horde of players just going to one side. And you can't create anything like that because your player's not intricate either. There's no creativity that's coming out of these players when you're so close to each other because you can't create anything. Mm. And that's why I didn't want Daniel James either. If you're going to do that, you're going to have to play Mason Greenwood because he's got that striker instinct. He's going to be the one that cuts in from that side to try and make something happen. But you didn't start him anyway. Another thing. And as for Lindelof, see, last year I said, maybe it's my own fault. Maybe I gave him too much credit than I should have. But last year...
Shame on you.
Yeah, shame on me indeed.
You for having belief.
Shame on me indeed. Because last year, I thought he was okay. He wasn't beaten on the ground. But I always said time and time again, in the air, he is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
However, in this game, he wasn't shocking in the air because he wasn't challenged in the air for anything. On the ground, he was an utter embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
I was shouting at Timothy Fosu-Mensah first because he was way too forward, not in his right back position. But then I thought to myself, wait, you have Jeffrey Schlupp next to you and you're literally next to him. You should be making that challenge. There's no reason why Schlupp should be very comfortable to whip a ball in to the other side. And then for the third goal, I mean, I genuinely don't know what the hell he was doing there. It was far too easy for Zaha. And the thing is, Zaha never even lost you, but he didn't have to lose you. You made it that easy. The penalty, you're next to the ball. I thought it was a bullshit penalty, but it is what it is. They gave it. You have to recover for it regardless. But it's just a whole myriad of things. And this is what I tell people. I don't blame Ole too much. I have to look at the players more so because they're on the pitch time and time again. However, his in-game management, and now that you pointed out to me that I completely forgot that McTominay and Pogba started that game.
That's just
mine. Because today I spent time on another podcast earlier on saying, yes, you can go into him, but the back end and everything, I went to the structure and all that. But at the end of the day, you played the same team, the same partnership. Mm. And you're right. If someone's going to create something from that midfield, it's not going to be Scott McTominay. It's going to be Paul Pogba. Mm. And if Pogba's not fit and you play Pogba against a team that's going to focus on him, then you're just setting him up for failure.
Yep.
And this is why I feel like he wants to play a midfield three of Pogba, Van de Beek and Bruno. If you play Van de Beek, could it be risky? Yes, because you don't know how they're going to work as a cohesive unit for the first time. but he's also someone that has creativity, someone that can play 1-2. So I can, you have to make them think about what's going to happen on the pitch. And if you, like you did, not even if you, you did take off Pogba for him, I genuinely don't know what his plan is anymore. It's just slapping me in the face. I'm just like, wait, hold on. Have I just given you a bit of credit for absolutely no reason? Because everything's just slapping me in the face again now. And I'm starting to get annoyed at him now. So, honestly, it's just a complete and utter mess on all levels. But it was just another pathetic performance. All tactics aside, there was no drive to even try and win the game. And as fans in general, when you're watching a football game, you want to see footballers that are committed to their jobs. Mm-hmm. And there was no commitment anyway. I still feel like Rashford is injured or carrying injuries, but he won't open his mouth and say, I'm injured. I think he's going to try and train, get over it, because the first thing Solskjaer said is that he was carrying an injury. It wasn't the back this time, it was an ankle injury. If you've got an ankle injury, you can't take on players. You can't be explosive. You've got to be cautious. And we know you're better when you're beating players with your dribble, on the switch skills and trying to take on players and hitting balls. He was ineffective again. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, again, who are you dropping him for? Because we know for a fact you're not convinced by Ighalo, not convinced by this guy, you're not convinced by that guy. So who are you going to bring in to challenge him? But are they going to back him? That's another discussion for another day. So,
well, listen, we can have that discussion now, mate. Let's have that discussion now, because you and I, we've spoken about this at great length. Okay, and I'm just going to say this for the benefit of the listeners, because I'm sick to death of seeing people on social media lose their shit about the lack of transfer activity. There's always something to moan about. You know, United announced the signing of Van der Beek. You check the replies on the official Man United site, and it's all these fans saying, well, what about Sancho? Hang about. If Van der Beek joined Spurs or Real Madrid, you'd be saying, how come we've missed out on this player? So you can't have it both ways. Right now, again, I'm going to reiterate what I told you, but again, for the benefit of the listeners, Man United Football Club are in a situation where they need to sell before they can buy. Okay, has anyone left the club this summer?
Sanchez.
No, Alexis Sanchez. Okay, yeah, well, but he left anyway, right? He was already a player for Inter, but they've signed one player. But on their books, they still have Marcus Rojo on 80 grand a week. Okay, they still have Phil Jones on 100 grand a week. Right? They've still got Chris Smalling on probably 90 grand a week. They've got Diego Dalo on a big wage. They've got Fred. They've got so many players on a big wage. Mm. Now, let's look at things objectively here, right? Who in their right mind would spend 80 grand a week on Marcus Rojo, even if he's available on a free? And, you know, even if Mendes says, you know what, I don't need my agent fee. Just take the guy. Just take him. Mm. Who's going to give Rojo 80 grand a week or 60 or 50 or 40? No one's going to do that. Yeah. Phil Jones, this is the player who signed a contract extension a year and a half ago, because in the Glazers' minds, or Ed Woodward, or whoever's there, they thought, well, it's a cheaper option to sign him up to a new contract, because then we won't lose him on a free and we won't have to buy any players and pay all the signing on fees and the transfer fees and the agent fees. So it works out cheaper for them to sign, to keep a player who they're not going to use, because they're not using him. But this is the logic. But Man United Football Club can sit there and complain. Sorry, Man United Football Club can sit there and brag about having 300 million followers and fans worldwide, fans in China, fans in India, fans in America. They can brag about that. They can use it in their end of year financial records. We've got X amount of fans. But then when the shit hits the fan, and there's people on social media saying, United aren't doing enough, United aren't doing enough, they go crying to ESPN. And they say, oh, well, we don't like all of this criticism. Well, you can't have it both ways. Yeah. You reap what you sow. So everything that's happening at the club, the fans deserve it, the players deserve it, and the board sure as hell deserve it. And I'll tell you this for now, okay? And we're probably going to look back on this in May and have a good laugh about it and say, oh, well, still was wrong. But if Man United do not make any serious headway in the transfer market between now and October the 5th, or whenever the deadline is done, you could forget about top four, you could forget about top six, you could forget about top 10, as far as I'm concerned. This isn't an overreaction, it's fact. Because with that back line being as shod as it is, with that goalkeeper being as indecisive as he is, with that midfield who no one knows is the best midfield. There are, how many central midfielders are there? Kojo? Van der Beek? Fernandes, Pogba, Matic, Fred, McTominay, Pereira. That's seven.
Jesus.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, going forward, you mentioned Rashford and Martial. You've got Ighalo. Daniel James, is he going to get you 20 goals a season? He's going to get you five assists a season. Is he going to get you 10 assists? No. He's not. Jesse Lingard, Spurs won him. What is going on? This club is a mess. It's a mess from top to bottom. And again, the blame isn't just on the Glazers. Don't get me wrong. It isn't just on them. It isn't just on Ed Woodward. The players have to take responsibility for their actions. It's all well and good, Marcus Rashford, doing this whole, you know, feed the kids. Feed the kids. Great, feed the kids, give them free school dinners. But all of that is, you're trying to cloud your performances, the way that you're underperforming. I don't know what's happened to Anthony Martial. People talking to me about, oh yeah, cold-blooded killer, black gloves. Well, get OJ Simpson. Get OJ Simpson. He'll do a better job. People think I'm joking when I say this. I'm being serious. Get OJ Simpson, play him up front. He's more lethal.
But don't kill me like that, man. That's funny.
He's more lethal.
Yeah.
But see, this is the thing. You know, you can always look at Liverpool and Chelsea and Arsenal and Man City and all these other clubs that are doing well in the transfer market. But the fact is, you cannot bring any more players. Financially, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. Look at Liverpool, right? And again, I was talking to a mate about this yesterday, funny enough. When Jurgen Klopp looks at his squad and he says, I don't want Jordan Ibe, let's get rid of him. I don't want Dominic Solanke, let's get rid of him. Well, Adam Lallana is coming to the tail end of his career. He's a bit injury prone. He's on 45 grand a week. Just let him go. He's out of contract. Say thank you, shake your hand, give him his money, boom, he's gone. They get rid of these players. Nathaniel Clyne, out of contract. Well, they spent how much money on Nathaniel Clyne? They've had a massive loss, but he's gone on a free. Why? Because they back the manager. Yeah. They back the manager. But Manchester United Football Club do not back this manager. It's all well and good bringing him in because they know that he's going to be their bulletproof vest. You know, bring him in, pacify some of the top reds. You know, keep them quiet. Ollie's at the wheel, this and that. He did really well. But when shit hits the fan, it's Ollie that's going to get the blame.
Yeah.
And then they can sack him and they can bring in another guy. It's, you know, eat, sleep, repeat, all that kind of shit. The club is a mess.
Yeah.
Okay, and to be fair, and you know, again, people are going to get on my back. I actually find this mildly amusing because I've been saying this for the best part of 15 years that this was going to come, this day was going to come. And here we are, ladies and gents, here we are. And people are only complaining about Jadon Sancho. Why the fuck would Jadon Sancho want to join Man United?
Exactly.
Why the fuck would he want to do that?
Exactly.
He's pinging balls to Alfie Haaland's son.
Mm.
Pinging balls to him and he's banging in the back of the net. What's he going to do if he gives him to Anthony Martial? What's he going to do? Tell me. Give it to OJ Simpson. Fuck's sake. Anyway, Man United lost. Who gives a shit? In the next few weeks, we're going to have the same shit over and over again. And you know what? As I said, this time next May, we'll probably be laughing about it.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
Okay, happy days. Let's talk about happy things. Arsenal. They won again. They won again. And as I said last week on the pod, they've got a better manager than Man United. But see, this is a difference, right? This is a difference between Solskjaer and Arteta, right? Arteta has got a backroom staff with tons of experience.
Yeah.
Tons of experience. Mm. You know, in fact, one of their coaches was at Man United under Van Gaal. He brought in Steve Round. Failed, didn't he? Yeah. Steve Round failed under David Moyes, pissed off a lot of United players, but he's doing a job at Arsenal, right? But here you've got a tactically astute manager that knows how to man-manage, that knows how to freeze out players who don't deserve to be wearing the shirt, that are on big money. Have you noticed something? Different parallels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, they've got a striker that scores 25, 30 goals a season on a new contract. They've made some fantastic signings. They've got Gabriel, the central defender. Willian's been playing well. Lacazette looks like another striker and a new signing. And Ketia looks like a new signing. And here we go. Arsenal Football Club are serious now. And does that mean the end of AFTV by any chance? Because Arsenal are doing well. But anyway, let's talk about Arsenal. Talk to me about Arsenal. What do you make of them so far?
Oh no! Unfortunately, in my life, I've got too many Arsenal fans around me. So you know, I've grown up with them, and they haven't ever left me alone. So I get to hear about Arsenal all the time, and I've been hearing about their complaints and obviously their happiness and certain things. And the first thing, I'm sure, as you know, a lot of before Arteta was even near the job, when he was first linked, I'm sure a lot of you were hearing things about he's the guy that puts down cones for Guardiola. And my...
We've heard that on numerous podcasts, my friend.
He's the
one that jumped the cone. He's the one that got jumpers for goalposts. And I said it, back this manager because he's going to surprise a hell of a lot of people.
Exactly. And you can tell that he just knows the game of football. And this is the one thing, you know, the one thing we always talk about Arsenal is they lack a backbone. They don't have a good defence. What's his name? Patrice Evra. They were angry. The fan base were angry when he said that it felt like they were playing against children at the time. It was men against boys. But Arsenal fans have been angry at that. Also felt that when they were watching their team, it was always men against boys, but their team were the boys. So now Arteta's come in and he's got them playing a lot more in a way they're tactically more aware. They have a lot more fight and determination about them. And the players that don't have that determination, the players that disrespect, the players that don't turn up for training on time, the players that are on big wages but don't have the passion to play for the team, you don't see them. So, you know, when Emery came in, he signed in Guendouzi. Guendouzi had a decent run in the first team. He was playing a lot of games. He was being a standout even when he was all right, but because they were excited about having another young midfielder. But the first thing you found out about him is that his attitude wasn't up to par. So Arteta's taken him, seeing that he's, after that whole Brighton fiasco where they lost the game and he's gone and spoken trash to someone who's beating your team, you hadn't seen him since. He's gone missing. And to top it up, he wasn't even turned up for training on time. So if you've got someone like that that behaves like that, they've said, it's time to go. Very simple. So yes, he's managed to fight his way in the club, stay in the club. Arteta said, okay, look, it's a new season. I'm giving you another opportunity to prove to me that you can play for this club. Not even ability-wise, because you obviously do have ability. That's why you're here. But I need to see that determination, that attitude that you want to go on the pitch and perform at a good level for this club and improve here. We haven't seen Guendouzi much yet, but at least you know that Arteta's got him drilled in. You guys complain about Ozil. And when Ozil came back and he stunk out the joint, it was drop Ozil. Now you can't talk about Ozil being in and out because right now you look like you don't even need him. Dani Ceballos was unwanted by his favourite club in Spain, Real Betis, and he was so sure about going there. He spoke to your manager, he's staying. Aubameyang was wanted by some of the biggest clubs in this nation. You finished eighth, but he's still at your club and he's enjoying life. But that's the difference. Arteta has been allowed to implement what he wants in the club. He's been allowed to do his thing there, and the players are showing that respect because he doesn't tolerate BS. I don't feel the same way about this club here. So
there you go.
Yeah,
there
you go. I don't even call them their proper name. I call them Man Red, like they used to be on. You know, for me personally, you find it hilarious. I find it hilarious as well. But I genuinely am quite envious of Arsenal fans right now because I feel like I look at it. It's the outside looking in. But I see progress. I see progression. I see promise. I see something that you can build upon bit by bit. And that's not me saying that Arsenal are suddenly going to get into the Champions League again. They don't need that. What they need is a steady level of progress where you can now say, oh, look at what they're building. Because they're not there Liverpool. They're not there City. But towards the end of last season, they beat City and they've beaten Liverpool twice. Doesn't matter the style, they got the job done. So yes, when I say that to people, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer beat Pep Guardiola twice. Well, congratulations. David Moyes in his shocking time at Solskjaer beat Real Barcelona. It happens in football. Southend with Freddie Eastwood knocked out Manchester United one time. I think it was in the FA Cup years ago.
League Cup, yeah. Ronaldo and Rooney were playing their roots all, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It happens. This is football. So you can't hang on to these things because if you beat someone that's supposed to be the favourite to beat you, but then you go and bum it out against someone else, it's a waste of time. Whereas Arteta has beaten these guys and they were even poor against West Ham, but they came away with 3 points.
Yep.
So that's progress. Because usually in these games, if they play bad, they lose. So, you know, it's early days, but the fact that you can see things building already, you can see changes in the boardroom. Raul Salerni's gone. Mr. Don Raul, he's gone.
Gone Raul.
Yeah, gone Raul. I like that. I actually like that. Like, you know, he's these are things that needed to happen. And because they're happening, you're seeing happiness at a top level and on the pitch and in with the manager. So all praise to Arsenal. I'm not even going to try and criticise them. I think they're doing the right things. The players are starting to enjoy their football again properly. And you're seeing them reap the benefits. So they're going to go from strength to strength.
You know what, this, without this sounding homoerotic, something made my balls tingle when Arteta took over the Arsenal job. I was watching this behind-the-scenes video that the Arsenal website put out, and it was Arteta going around meeting the players, meeting the coaching staff. And then he went to this little room, and it had TVs, monitors, it had all the equipment where they, you know, did the performance analysis, all that kind of stuff. And he's standing there, he looks at one of the guys, he goes, "Do we have drones?" And I'm like, this guy is so meticulous, right? Mm-hmm. I know probably loads of clubs have drones, but the fact that he even thought that, like, you know what, I want an aerial view, you know, of what the players are doing in training, not on the pitch playing football, like on match day. I want to see what they're doing during in training, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care about heart monitors. I don't care about how many distance, you know, how far they run distance-wise. I want to see what they're doing off the ball as well. When they're doing their Rabonas, I want to see what they're doing, their body language. Then he started talking about body shape. Like, you received the ball, but your body shape was completely wrong. And I'm like, that's a coach.
Yeah.
That is a coach. He finds the tiniest detail, and he'll pick at it, and he'll pick at it, and he'll drum it into the players' heads. Look at Granit Xhaka, okay? When he signed for Arsenal, I was telling Arsenal fans, this guy can play football. And then his first couple of seasons, he was terrible, and, you know, he was playing left-back, he was playing centre-back, and then he got taken off, and he was cupping his ears to the fans, and everyone was like, never play with this guy again, da-da-da-da-da. Look at him now.
Yeah.
He's looking like a fucking baller, man.
Yeah.
But this is because when you've got a coach that knows how to coach, that can manage, that can motivate, this is what happens.
Yeah.
He's got the likes of Saka that's come leaps and bounds as a youngster, you know, no fear whatsoever. And he hasn't even gone through a growth spurt yet. Can you imagine what he's going to be like when he goes through that, right? Bellerin was another player, was more focused on his modelling. But again, it's the attitude. He's completely done a 360, or should I say a 180, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I'm not good at angles. But, you know, he's like the consummate pro now. And he's playing well. Listen, Ceballos has been great. Kolasinac, when he played yesterday, he was decent. Holding looks like it. So, listen, I don't like waxing lyrical about Arsenal because the Arsenal fans are going to get too far ahead of themselves like they normally do. But in all fairness, I don't blame them because, as you said, quite rightly, there's progress. There is progress. And they're actually progressing quicker than I actually expected them to. But again, it goes back to recruitment. It goes back to coaching. It goes back to the whole ethos of the club. And this is the fundamental difference between Arsenal and United. I should say those are the fundamental differences between them and United. Then, you know what? As much as I dislike Arsenal as a fan base, because a lot of them are pretty decent people, but most of them are a bit weird. It's good to see a club like that actually doing things the right way. And again, I repeat, Ozil is not needed. He's on 300 grand a week. But you know what Arteta's gone? I don't give a shit how much money you're on. I don't care if you're the highest paid player at the club. I don't care. You ain't putting in the effort. I don't need you in my plans. You're a bad egg. Stay out of the dressing room. I don't need you.
Yeah.
Guendouzi, you're a little shit. You chat too much shit. You know, all talk. That's all it is. No, don't need you. And at the end of the day, the players that he's got there, like your Elnenis, who was in the wilderness, he was in Turkey, wasn't he? Willock, players like that. They're squad players, but they're still doing a job. Good luck to them, I say. Good luck to them.
Yeah, you know. Thank you.
Do we have anything to say about West Ham? Because I said last week that when they lost against Newcastle, that was the first nail in David Moyes' coffin. I think he's got a second nail now. He's done, isn't he? He's done. He won't last November. He won't.
Yeah, he's been done. I told you guys many times that when he got the job, I asked the day out. That's probably the worst day of my life. If I'm being honest. So, I was fuming, and I'm still fuming that I see him now. But they've got a lot more problems outside the pitch anyway. I mean, no one's happy with the with GSB. There's a whole lot of uproar about that as well. So yeah, but on the pitch, they've got players that will try their best. Obviously, I'm not talking about Felipe Anderson. He's not someone that will try his best. I'm talking about Mikel Antonio, Declan Rice, because he's trying to be Mr. West Ham. Like, obviously, he's I call him his father.
Mark he's Noble. Taking the baton off Mark Noble, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to be that guy. But
do you think Mark Noble gives seminars to West Ham youngsters about how to do things the West Ham way?
I really feel like
blowing bubbles, Bobby Moore. We won the World Cup in '66.
Yeah, I. Funny enough, we're laughing about it, but I've always had this thought of him just. You know, when someone walks into the dressing room for the first team of the first team for the first time, you're walking through the corridor and say, hey, wait, just look at this picture. See, this is history. This is what it feels like to be West Ham. Yeah, look at the shirt, it's this badge. Look, I feel like he's really like that. So, yeah, they got players that still try and fight for the shirt, and they might just get enough points to stay up the season. But David Moyes has not been it. He will never be it. And as long as he stays there, and then also the ownership stays there, West Ham will never progress. So that's me on West Ham personally.
Yeah, did you ever watch Man versus Food?
I watched that quite a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Adam Richman has to eat a certain amount of food at a certain time. Yeah. I can imagine a West Ham player signs for the club. He goes into the dressing room, meets all the players, and they go into the canteen. And here's Mark Noble, the knife and a fork, right? And he goes, "This is your initiation. You've got to beat me at eating." Jelly deals. You've got to eat as many jelly deals, pie and mash, everything. You've got pie and mash, jelly deals. He's got everything, every traditional East London grub that you're going to get from a greasy spoon. You got to beat me. Then you could be accepted at the club. There you go.
I love Noble.
Someone's going to be listening to this like, for the first time. Like, this show is so stupid.
It's funny. Right. You're enjoying it. That's what you're doing.
You'd be right. Okay, speaking of funny, Southampton's high line today against Spurs.
Oh, God.
When I saw Spurs' equaliser from Son, they went a goal down and then Son equalised. The first thing I thought of was Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, the 5-0. When they absolutely destroyed them, because Real Madrid's central defenders or their back four were literally on the halfway line for most of the game. And lo and behold, Spurs scored five. And each time Son was breaking through, I'm thinking, what is going on here? You've conceded a goal at the stroke of half time by playing a high line. Your goalkeeper was in no man's land. If you thought Kepa was bad, this guy was even worse, right? Mm. And yet they continued with the same system, which clearly wasn't working. But no. We go 2-1 down. Let's do the same thing. What was it that Einstein said about repeating yourself? Insanity, that kind of
thing? Yeah, definition of insanity.
Yeah. Come on, talk to me.
I think everyone and their mother knows how much I hate trash defending. So, I mean, I was genuinely so baffled at it, because if you do the same thing five times, what the hell do you think is going to happen? Mm-hmm. Son had the day of his life, honestly.
And he was living his best life, wasn't he?
He was living his best life. But see, this has been an issue of mine with like some coaches in general. I mean, Hassan Hüttl has been one of them as well. Is I understand that last year they did well, Danny Ings being the forefront of getting loads of goals, but they have so many frailties, and I feel like him, he has only a plan A and there's never been a plan B or a plan C. Mm. And maybe he thought he could play maybe he could play such a high line just because he maybe thought Jose Mourinho would come there and tell these guys to sit back and counter. But isn't that feeding into what they want?
Right.
Like, I mean, because if you, like, surely if you push so far forward, the one thing they're going to do is hit you on the counter.
Yep.
And that's what they did five times. So this is why I get annoyed with coaches now, because like I'm not a high level professional coach. I'm still trying to get into the game. But if I can see this sitting at home and I can see it happening for you and your team.
I'm not even a coach. I'm just a viewer and I saw it.
Exactly.
Sake.
So if we can see this at home, watching on TV, surely you as a coach, week in and week out, day in and day out with these same players, and your style of play, you should know. Wait, hold on. Nah, this ain't working. Maybe we should retreat a little bit. And you don't even have the defenders with the pace to catch up to Son. So Son has just scored four goals, something he's probably done for the first time in his career. And then even Harry Kane got in on the act, and even Hibbs got. I mean, genuinely, it was I went from laughing to annoyance because you know me and defending. It has to come that you just have to defend. But again, this is the problem. Recovery defending. This is why, at the same time, I really feel like if they played a deeper block and it was time to close down players, they wouldn't know when and how to close down a player anyway, because everything's now, I can chase you back, because yes, they're driven with the ball and they have to control the ball, so they'll slow down a little bit. No, that's not how football works. If they're quality, they'll slap you up. So, I don't know, man. Me personally, I just found it hilarious. Mm. And I felt like Son has just gone into the dressing room and said, hey, yo, are we playing them again? When are we playing again? Make sure we do the same thing, boys. Because it was an absolute joke. So, Hassan Hüttl, personally, I'll never be a fan unless he starts to change his ways, which will be never. And Southampton are probably in for another season of pain again. And if they play like that again, they got another 9-1 coming.
Mm. Real soon. All right, let's talk quickly about Spurs, because I'm going to do a complete U-turn now. Because at the beginning of the season, I thought that Jose Mourinho, with that squad, wouldn't get anywhere. But now they've got a certain Gareth Bale and Reguilón, the defender from Sevilla or from Real Madrid. I've got a feeling that Spurs are going to do something dangerous this season. They might win the FA Cup or the League Cup. Mm. I could see them even challenging for top four, especially if Chelsea's back line doesn't get sorted soon. Because I'll tell you this for now, that player that scored twice against Liverpool in a Champions League final, he's not just an impact player. We're talking about one of the top 10 players in the world. Okay, even a half-fit Gareth Bale is a problem. Is a problem. So when you've got Bale, Son, Kane... Wow. Go on. What are your thoughts on Gareth Bale, first of all? Do you think he will settle in quickly? And also, will this signing change your prediction? I don't even know what you thought about Spurs at being this interview.
What was my prediction? Oh, no, I said they'll probably get into Europa League again. I didn't think they'll get into the Champions League. Mm. Because I didn't see them making signings. That was my problem. I didn't think that they're going to get Mourinho or anyone. And that was worrying for me because in an unreleased free midfield podcast, which we did when I was in Spain, when they first brought Mourinho in, my thing was, if they've made this statement by bringing him in, knowing what happened at Man United, with him saying that he will not go to another club unless he finds out that things are promised will be given to him, you're in for a world of pain if you do not back this manager. Mm. And I thought going into the season, yep, you know, they lost to Everton and you still ain't brought anyone in. And then out of nowhere, Reguilón, Bale, just like that.
Yep.
And for any United fans...
It just shows you how quick you could do a transfer, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, for any United fans...
Not about anything. You know,
yeah, any United fans listening, you know, if you want to hear about quick transfers, I mean, I just heard about Wolves doing Semedo, but that's another thing. So, yeah, you know, these two signings, first of all, Bale, I have never lost faith in Bale. I feel like, even though he's been ridden with injuries quite for the last, 2-3 years, he's still showing quality when he needs to show it. And Madrid fans also just lack a lot of patience. But if you look at his overall record, he's got a damn good record at Real Madrid. He's won the trophies. He's won everything that he can win there. So he succeeded there. He's not a flop by any word of the sort of thing. Not even close. He is a complete and utter success. And he's contributed majorly to a lot of their success. Now, if he stays fit, which I genuinely believe he can at Spurs, because I think they'll manage him better, because there's a lot more care about him over here. Madrid just didn't want him there at all, so I don't think they really care too tough. He'll be a success here. And that front three is scary. Because, again, still, you'll see from social media when Martial started scoring goals, so they compared him to Harry Kane. Harry Kane, who, despite... And I pointed this out in a Man United group chat of mine, before I left it, because there was just too much complete and utter bullshit or for any Ghanaian system in Kwasi Asim.
I love it. That word, right? I just love it.
It's beautiful. I love it because it's said with so much energy. Like when you say Kwasi, it feels like you're really hurting someone's soul. But I pointed out, I said, you do understand, right, that despite Harry Kane having much less game time because of injuries, he still scored more goals in the league and overall in the season than Martial. And Martial still had European football to compete in. Mm-hmm. So they're not levels. They are not the same. And it only takes him, what, a couple of games to get into his groove, and then he'll start hitting two or three games. And the one thing I like about this signing of Bale is I feel like he's had to get a lot more involved in the play of Kane, just because apart from Son, there's not been anyone behind him that's been really creative in trying to get them goals and trying to go forward and create something. Now you've got Bale on the other side of you, and then you play maybe a Lo Celso, and maybe if he wants to play Ndombele or Højbjerg and then someone else, you've got creative players on both sides. If he wants to get involved in the play, you've got players with the imagination and the IQ to get into positions to score goals. Bale can score from range because Lucas Moura cannot score goals from long range. Mm-hmm. So you've got a variety of players around you now with different skill sets that can work with you and your skill set also. He's only going to flourish. And Son, when Kane was injured, did well that season when he played a lot more as a striker. He scored some wonderful goals for them from inside the box, outside the box. They've just improved their options big time. And Ben Davies is like I call him like a meh defender. He's not great going forward. He's not particularly great defensively. He's like a standard court sort of defender that just does something. But they've improved on that side with Reguilon, who's very good going forward. And it's actually very good defensively. And Doherty going forward has proven at Wolves that he's great. He's good. And he's going to do the same for Tottenham as well. So, me personally, if I was Mourinho, I would be happy, so, so happy right now. And I don't even feel like they're done yet. I still feel like they're going to try and get another backup striker, which they've needed for years. They've needed someone that would actually stay there, because Llorente was a pit stop signing, to be honest. Even though he did well for them in the Champions League, got that goal against Man City, one or two goals here and there, he was never someone that you could look to long-term. 32 years old at that time. They weren't going to look in towards another 3-4 years. They're looking to bring someone in that can stay there for the 3-4 years and maybe challenge Kane. But more importantly, if Kane is not there, someone that you can look upon as being reliable enough to play his role. And I don't think they've had that since Jermaine Defoe. I don't think they've had that since Roman Pavlyuchenko. But that's what happens when you bring in a manager who has the common sense to bring these players in. And if you back him, they will come and play for him. Mm. I mean, a certain club that we both have in common, Man Red, had him. He finished second with a team that shouldn't have finished second, and they didn't back him properly in the window, and they suffered, and they deserved to suffer for it. Spurs finished sixth. Not a great season, but in Europa League. And what have they done? They've gone aside Champions League level quality players.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing, right? With Mourinho at Man United, he rubbed up certain players the wrong way, okay? And these are players that were very, very sacred to the club. He fell out with Martial. He fell out with Pogba. He fell out with Ander Herrera at one point. I think at one stage, David De Gea and Mourinho were at loggerheads. Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure they were. But you're talking about four players that are very influential.
Yeah.
Now he's at Spurs, right? He can really afford to rub up most players. I think the only person that he can't really piss off is Harry Kane. But Harry Kane will do the job that Mourinho wants him to do,
because exactly,
he's that good.
Yeah.
So what is Harry Kane's job? Score goals. Well, he does that anyway.
Yeah.
What is Harry Kane's other role at Spurs under Jose Mourinho? What, come deep and collect the ball? Well, he does that anyway. He did that under Pochettino. Or drift defenders out of position. He did that anyway. So everything that Harry Kane will be expected to do under Jose, he does anyway. Yeah. So he isn't going to argue or fall out with Mourinho. We saw Mourinho in that documentary saying that some of the Spurs players, like most of them, aren't cunts. Do you know what I mean? They don't have that cuntish mentality. Well, do you know what? Even though Gareth Bale isn't one, right? He's still got that little bit of fight in him. He's still got that little bit of, you know, that little bit of needle. And that's what you need. But he's a winner as well. And this is one thing that I've been saying about Spurs for years. Bring in winners. Bring in players that know what it takes to win. Because if you don't have that around the club, then you've got nowhere to go. In fact, the only proven winner at that club is the goalkeeper, because he's won a World Cup, he's won French league titles, right? Davinson Sanchez won an Eredivisie, but what, one or two? Mm. The rest of the players, who's won anything at Spurs there? Yeah. Doherty? Yeah. Has he? Mm. Adeviro? No. Yeah. Ben Davis? No. Yeah. Who else? Dele Alli? No. Højbjerg? Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, mind you, I think Højbjerg won the Bundesliga when he was at
Bayern Munich. Yeah.
But was he a bit part player, or was he? You know, was he?
He wasn't relevant. Right. Yeah.
Okay, so then you look at Lucas Moura. All right, he won the Ligue 1 with Paris Saint-Germain.
But again, bit part.
Right. Son was at Leverkusen. So again, no winners. But here you go. A guy that has not only scored an overhead kick in a Champions League final, right? He scored the goal that kept them in the Champions League final against Atletico Madrid.
Yes.
So don't tell me that Gareth Bale, not you, obviously, other fans, don't tell me that Gareth Bale won't make an impact at Spurs. Exactly. He will not only make an impact on the pitch, he'll make it off the pitch. And don't forget one thing. Tottenham's academy is one of the best in the country.
Facts.
So when you've got 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds pulling up to train, and they see Harry Kane, and they see Dele Alli, and they see all these other players, imagine what they're going to feel like when Gareth Bale was there.
Yeah.
And he meets them, and maybe they kick a ball about with him. You don't know about these things. And this is the thing, right? People don't look at the bigger picture. When United signed Laurent Blanc, he was 36 years old, and people were saying, oh, shit, he's done. And yeah, he had some terrible performances. But I'll say this to him blue in the face. What do you think John O'Shea learned? Wes Brown? Even Rio Ferdinand?
Yes.
The world's most expensive defender at the time. What do you think he learned from Laurent Blanc? Mm. So you cannot rule out a player's age. Don't forget, Kojo, in the past two years, Gareth Bale has only played 45 games for Real Madrid.
Right, okay.
Right? Out of a possible, what? 80? 85? If we're counting Champions League or Copa del Rey, all these other ones, right? Mm. So we're not talking about a player that is, is unfit. A player that isn't fresh. He's fresh, all right. And he's going to cause problems. And I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted he's gone there, because I've been saying it for the best part of 3 years, 4 years, or when he fell out with Zidane the first time. Bring him to United, because we need players like that.
Yeah, we do.
Because he's a positive attitude, he's a positive influence. And all this talk about him playing golf and that kind of shit, again, it's a similar sort of thing with Pogba in the UK. Every time he does something that, rattles the media, they get on his back. It's the same with Bale in Spain. Well, because he joked about and he wanted to play golf. Well, you know what? I'm sorry, but if you're out in the cold, what do you want him to do?
Exactly.
Sit on his arse and cry? No. Exactly. So, do you know what? Again, like Arsenal, good luck, Tottenham, because you deserve all the best, honestly.
I agree.
Spurs especially, because their fans have been through fucking hell and back. They deserve a trophy.
Yeah,
I won't begrudge them that at all. At all.
They do.
Right. Next game. Ooh, which one should we go with? Should we do Leeds? Because they got another 4-3.
Yeah.
Sunday won that one. Weren't they 4-1 up at the time?
They were 4-1 up, yeah.
And then they almost let that one slip. See, this is a weird one for me, because I like Leeds United in terms of their style of play. I don't like them as a club. Hmm. For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And I admire what Bielsa has done. I'm not one of these people to jump on the bandwagon. I've always felt he's been a very, very, very astute manager. Very tactically strong. And I'm surprised that he's lasted as long as he has with Leeds. Not because Leeds aren't a big club, but because I'd expect other clubs to come in for him.
Mm.
You know? But they cannot, and I repeat, they cannot concede 3 to 4 goals a game. You know, there's all this talk about them being a top 10 team. I believe that there are 6 or 7 teams that are worse than them in the Premier League. And this is why I don't think they'll go down.
Mm.
But again, you cannot concede 4 goals on the opening day, 3 goals at home against Fulham on a regular basis. You've got to tighten up that defence, because as we saw with Liverpool under Brendan Rodgers, the reason why they didn't win the league is not because Steven Gerrard slipped. It's not because they let 3 goals slip at Crystal Palace. It's because they conceded 51 goals that season. That's league right. Champions do not concede 51 goals in a season. I'm sorry.
Right. That's right.
And if you want to stay in this league and be competitive, you got to keep those zeros, mate. You got to have that zero in the top left-hand corner. So, yeah. Carry on.
There's one person that scares me in that defence, and it's Robin Koch. No.
Almost spat my apple juice out. Sorry. Whose did he rob? I'm sorry. What?
that name has so many jokes behind it. It's going to be one hell of a season. but he is absolutely shocking, man. Like, what? 2 games now and he's just been crapping both of them.
But didn't join from Freiburg?
Yeah.
What, aren't they like a Bundesliga 2 team?
Yeah, no, I think
they're
so.
They're not Bundesliga team. They're second division.
Second division, yeah. I think so. And man, I'm still right now, in this moment right now, still trying to figure out why the hell he thought it was good to just slide to the ground and try and take out whoever the Fulham player that he was that took out for the penalty. It was just, there was no need to do it whatsoever. Like, just genuinely no need. But then his decision-making in that whole game, decision-making against Liverpool in the whole game was just, it was just comedic. So, I guess, you know, he's a new signing. I guess Bielsa has a bit more faith in him than, you know, especially because he lost Ben White. So, maybe that's the replacement for Ben White at the back. But, man, if I were you, I would beg and plead Brighton to give me Ben White one more season, because if this is the guy that's going to stay in your defence, you're going to go from teams, people give you a prediction of top 10 to you barely being about 15th. He's that bad.
This has got to be a concern for Leeds, though, because, you know, we hear the same rhetoric about, oh, well, come February, March, they're going to be tired. And if that is the case, because they haven't strengthened heavily. Don't get me wrong, I didn't expect them to go out and bring in 6 or 7 or 8 players like other teams have done in the past, because that completely makes them disjointed and it might ruin the cohesion. I get it. And the signings that they have made, okay, apart from Koch, who hasn't been great, they're good players. But the thing is, when you're going through a whole season, because don't forget, they've still got League Cup, they've still got FA Cup, okay? And I know they're not in Europe, but at the same time, playing that style of football with that intensity, I'm pretty sure that Liverpool game was a massive lesson for him. And this is the thing. I'm not the kind of person to get on the team's back after one bad result. If they're making the same mistakes week in, week out, like we saw with Southampton, right? Yeah, that's when you can say, yeah, you deserve criticism and you deserve to get pammed for it. But I think that loss at Liverpool was a massive learning curve, not just for the club itself, but also for Bielsa. Because thinking, these are the levels that we need to reach. And yeah, we scored 3 goals against these guys, but we conceded 4. How are we going to prevent this from happening again? Well, they conceded 1 less against Fulham, and I think that was down to complacency more than anything. But at the same time, you cannot have complacency in this league because it's unforgiving. Yeah. One bad mistake and you're fucked. Look at Kepa today. One mistake, game over. That's it, done.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Well, this is my thing. I mean, again, this is a modern football thing, I guess. You know, I mean, I'm only 27 years old, but I'm talking as if I'm 50. But
well, that Super Bowl.
I do not regret it one bit. I've got 2 in my fridge right now. but it's this obsession with free-flowing football, which leaves people and teams so open. And my worry is, I'm not saying that, you know, you should come to the Premier League and immediately change your style, because obviously your style is what got you there. You should try and continue to play that. But sometimes you've got to try and the balance of being strong at the back, but also being, because you're not going to go against a team like when you had that Liverpool, it was 4-3. Fun for the neutral that, you know, it's end-to-end, there's goals everywhere. But 3 of your shots down on target led to goals. That's not going to be your luck every single game. Because that's not how it works. You're not going to get every shot that you get on target. It's not going to lead to a goal. So, you know, if they're going to keep being open like that, at some point, they're going to get one hell of a hiding. And when they receive that hiding, it's going to make them second guess themselves and think, is it smart for us to play such an open style? And it's going to be up to Bielsa to maybe drum it into the players and maybe say, yes, we are going to stick to this way because we're going to try and score as many goals as we can. Or he's going to say, maybe I can't trust my defensive line so much. Maybe I can't trust being so open and, you know, going for goals. Because when they play against Liverpool, let alone this week, the gap between the centre-back and Calvin Phillips, who is a flipping defensive midfielder for you, was huge. So if that gap is big, I can only imagine how much open space you have in the rest of the pitch. You know, so, I mean, I'm not going to say I worry for them because I don't like them. But, you know.
Tell me like it is.
But yeah, it is worrying for Leeds fans, in my opinion, just because you can't be that open week in and week out. You're going to receive some really, really bad losses this season if you continue to be really reckless like that.
Well, I'll be interested to see how they turn up against the likes of your Brightons and your Burnleys, because granted, there are a lot of teams in the Championship that are compact and they will try to get bodies behind the ball. But the likes of Brighton and Burnley, they're very dangerous on the counter-attack. And again, I fear for Leeds in that respect because, you know, it's all well and good playing beautiful football, but if you don't have that solidity at the back and that reassuring presence, you're going to have trouble. Now, again, I'm not saying that Leeds are going to struggle, but I honestly believe they really need to work on their defensive side because it's all well and good going forward. But I don't know, certain teams, as I said, like your Burnleys, like your Leicesters, even like your likes of Newcastles who play a relatively pragmatic system, they're still going to give them trouble. But on the flip side, because Leeds play such good football and they're really incisive, they will be putting 4 or 5 past teams. I mean, for Christ's sake, they scored 7 goals in the first 2 Premier League games. Man United haven't even had 7 on target in their first game.
That's facts. No, it's facts, yeah.
Now, your guy, Anthony Martial, I was looking at, I forgot to mention, you know, he had some stats I saw yesterday. He had no shots on target. He lost the ball 17 times. Just like little things. But you're not going to see that with Leeds. You're not going to see that with Liverpool. Because their players are expected to play. Let's not talk about United. Fuck United. Speaking of United, Newcastle, they lost to Brighton 3-0 at home. A result which I was quite surprised about. The game was practically over the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But again, Newcastle will always astound me as to... They will never cease to amaze me. That's what I want to say. They will never cease to amaze me because they got a very good result last week at West Ham. They played a fantastic style of football. And then here they go against Brighton, who, again, I expected to hit them on the counter-attack. And they absolutely blitzed them. That Lamptey, the right-back, what a star. What a star he's going to be. You know, they talk about James and Alexander-Arnold and Wan-Bissaka and all these other right-backs, but he's another one that's kind of creeping into that conversation now, isn't he?
Well, you know, this might hurt a lot of people's hearts, but I rate him much higher than I rate Wan-Bissaka.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've started to question a lot about Wan-Bissaka, but I'm not going to get into him too tough because, like I said, I don't even want to talk about him.
Play yesterday, that's not fair.
This is not just something about yesterday. This is, you know, this has been loading a little bit. It's been loading a little bit. I'm still trying to let it marinate, you know. It's still in the fridge marinating well before I put it in the oven and cook it really well.
It's like after you've done a Windows update, you're just waiting for that wheel just going around. Sorry, carry on.
But, no, Lamptey's electric, man. He's electric. His timing of runs is fantastic as well. His on the ball dribble is actually quite good as well, and his decision making more than anything. That's what I like about him. You want a player that's decisive in the right moments, and he's finding that already. So Brighton have got themselves quite a hell of a player there already, and of course he's not going to be there long term if he continues on this trajectory. Mm. But they must enjoy him while they can. Like, he was fantastic, and what they did to Newcastle was just, I mean, you can expect that from Newcastle once in a while, though. That's what kind of happens to them every now and then, because defensively, again, they're just not good enough either. And in the last 2 years, they've just been blessed to have Dubravka in goal. Someone who tries to be commanding and also has made some fantastic and important saves for them in his time there. So, you know, in this game, he couldn't save them. They were just done for in the first 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And as much as they tried to fight back, they just weren't capable of doing so. Shout out to the idiot of the week, Saint Maximin. One hell of a fantastic challenge on Lamptey to the play. Fucking idiot.
And do you know, I thought your idiot of the week was going to be Bissouma for almost decapitating.
You know what? This may sound silly, but I had images of, you know, when Booker T used to do like the back kick before he set up for the scissors kick, right?
How you dig it, sucker?
I literally sang that straight away when he played replay. I was like, oh my goodness, this is Booker T part 2. This is ridiculous. What a kick. Which I shouldn't be praising him for, but he actually had a good performance overall, so I don't want to give him the idiot of the week. But so Maximin's my idiot because not only did he make that challenge, but it says a lot about you as a character where you're playing a wing back. You as the forward should be forcing others to want to maybe ask for help or something. He completely changed wing because he couldn't deal with Lamptey. That's how bad he was. And then he went off with an injury. I think, to be honest, should have been off regardless of injury. He was just that bad. So, yeah, I had no issue with him being off the pitch. But all credit to Brighton. And Connolly as well, another one. Because when he first came through last year, I wasn't completely sure what it was about. Like, what he was about, rather, sorry. I didn't know if it was a player that just got lucky in terms of getting a shot. Obviously, I don't know much about Brighton's youth team, so I can't really say if he was doing anything at a lower level. But he was fantastic as well on the left side. He was really good. He seems confident. He seems feisty. He fights for challenges when they want to press, and he wins the ball more often than not, and he's able to start attacks, and he took his goal well as well. So, yeah, full praise to them. And obviously, what's this guy's name? Maupay scored a lot of nice goal as well, and obviously a penalty. So, yeah, Newcastle got exactly what they deserve, because anyone that's listening to me on here or anywhere else, you know I don't like Steve Bruce. So, really...
Oh, leave Brucey alone. It's not his fault that he got the job.
Well, yeah.
Was it? You make an offer, you can't refuse, yeah? There you go. Right, final game. Leicester 4, Burnley 2. Again, I didn't watch this one. I know it was on BBC One, Match of the Day, whatever they want to call it these days. Did you watch it? Did you get anybody talk to me about this one? Because I've got no problem with Leicester City. Kabaddi FC, I'm not a fan of, as you know. So them losing doesn't really hurt my feelings or anything. It cheers me up. But what did you see of Leicester? Did you see anything different of them than you did last season? Because I know they basically hit the ground running last season, didn't they? And then obviously COVID came in. In fact, their form in the build-up to COVID wasn't great. Then COVID hit, then we resumed, and they were just dog shit after that. But they haven't carried on that form. So it's almost as if clean slate. They won at the weekend last week against West Brom. They got a good win tonight. So, yeah, 6 points.
Yeah, no, I don't want to say they were comfortable because they obviously conceded two, but it was more like their on-the-ball quality showed a lot more than Burnley. As soon as Burnley went ahead, they sort of knuckled down, got back into the game real quick, and Harvey Barnes was electric. And I feel like this year, they're trying to get Youri Tielemans to be a bit more advanced than he was last year. His pass to Barnes for their second goal, we look at players, certain players do that on a weekly basis. Man, that pass was sensational, man.
Yeah.
It was a sensational pass, and he controlled the game when he needed to. Dennis Prey as well, with a phenomenal strike, rattled into the back of the net. One thing I will say about Kabaddi,
That you're calling him now.
I actually don't put him Burnley anymore. I actually put him Kabaddi. You haven't watched the game. So the second goal was genuinely pure Kabaddi, with the ball in. Far post, and their new signing, I forgot his name, but his centre back is Irish. Everything about the goal was
his shoulder. Please tell me it came off his shoulder.
So it came off his head, but what happened was he was tussling with the guy, and he just put his head down. Like, it wasn't towards the goal as well. Like, the goal's this side, and he just put his head down this way, and it's just like he was fighting, and the ball somehow hit his head and just went in. And he gave the most, aggressive British, come on, small celebration. And I was just watching thinking, you suck, man. I can't enjoy this. This is appalling. It was just genuinely pure Kabaddi. And now I've seen that goal. Now I can fully comprehend why you've given them that tag, because I understood it, but I needed something concrete. Even their first goal, Jesus Christ. Long ball over the top. Chris Wood fighting, I think it was Soyuncu, hits his head, hits his shoulder, and then even though it hit his arm, VAR with their new rules of if it hits the sleeve or something, but it clearly hit him here instead of the sleeve, hits him there, barges the guy and just rifles it with his right foot into the far post. And I was just like, this is hard to watch. If they win this game, I have no allegiance to Leicester, but if Burnley win this game, I'm going to be genuinely pissed off. This is not enjoyable. And you have Leicester who, they don't need to play attractive football. They play a nice brand of football, but their goals were well thought out and they were nice and they were creative. And I'm like, look at the goals they're scoring and look at what the hell you're doing. It's genuinely so scary. So, you know, we're in for another season of Kabaddi, and I really want them out of this league because.
I'll miss them. I'll miss calling the team Kabaddi FC. I can't think of any other names to call other teams. I mean, you know, when a couple of years back, Liverpool were scoring goals that were just like, I used to call Jumanji goals because they're just weird. You know, ball would hit Firmino's arse and go in, all that kind of stuff. But now, I've got Kabaddi FC. So the next team that comes up, I don't even know which teams are going to come out, obviously. But I have to think of a name for them, or I have to find a name for a Premier League team. I can't call Newcastle. I don't know what to call these teams anymore because I can only relate to Kabaddi FC and Burnley. So
it was embarrassing, man. Yeah. Jesus.
Okay. Well, that's it, I guess.
Yeah.
For the Premier League games, Wolves are playing City tomorrow, and Villa are playing Sheffield United. Maybe we'll have another repeat of that VAR didn't cross the line kind of thing. But thanks for joining me, my friend.
Oh, thanks for having me, bro. I mean, Rod didn't turn up, which is...
Wait, he messaged me about 5 minutes ago saying that he fell asleep, so...
Oh. Yeah. Well, I see, Rod, I hope you're going to listen to this, Rod. I missed you because I did that awful United breakdown and banter show, and they were like, oh, yeah, Rod's coming as well. I was like, oh, great. And there was no Rod, man. So I was like, oh, damn. So, Rod, you know, next time, I mean, I love listening to you on here as well, but I beg you, if you're there for a show with me, I beg you to turn up, please, because I miss you. So yeah, come through, man.
That sounded like one of those, you know, kid that's run away from home kind of things, and the parents has come out online or, you know, in the media to. I can't make jokes about that. Actually,
that's a bit risky.
But listen, we're not going to see Rod's face on a milk carton, so
no.
We're probably seeing a Paddy Power advert or something like that. Maybe even Coronation Street one day. You know, he says that. You know, they take the piss, and you know, he says, "Oh, you know, these newspapers. I'm not going to." Well, I'm telling you, one day he's going to be on Corrie. I'm telling you. And if you're listening, Rod, you're going to be on Corrie one day, and I'm going to laugh because you said that you'll never do it, but you will.
Well, if he is on, because I don't watch Corrie, but if he is on, please tell me. I'm going to watch that one just for him.
Oh, mate. Well, look. Thank you for joining me, man. Do you want to plug anything?
I guess just maybe my socials are Free and Midfield. What's Free and Midfield? Free and Midfield podcast, of course, on YouTube and all the audio ones. And on Twitter, of course, at Free Midfield. Myself, Coach Kojo, on Twitter. And because I'm doing a lot more stuff on FS Uncut, so I'm just going to plug them specifically because the space is there now.
You're the head honcho now, yeah? The face of the brand.
No, they give me a great opportunity to interview all these like journalists that they get from me and all that. So, at Coach Kojo and FS Uncut.
Excellent. That's a lovely one. You're on Instagram as well.
Coach _ Kojo B. So, that's where you find me.
Blended. Right, so that's it for us for another week. We'll be back hopefully next week with Rod, who probably won't be on the couch. Maybe might be on the toilet like it was last week. You just never know where Rod is going to be. You know, where's Rod?
Is that where he did it? In the
Yes, he started the show off on the shitter, yes. And we weren't even joking. He actually was taking the shit. And that was an actual flush. He did wash his hands. I don't know what he sang when he washed his hands, but he did wash his hands because we heard it. So there you go. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. As I said, we'll be back next week. So until next time. So I'm just still buzzing about Omonia's victory today and in midweek as well. So yeah, until next time, take care.